In Egypt today, Coptic Christian mourners thronged around Cairo's main cathedral. They gathered to say a final farewell to their patriarch, Pope Shenouda III. He was affectionately called Baba, or Father, by his followers. Pope Shenouda died Saturday at the age of 88. He spent his final years trying to ease tensions between Christians and Muslims in Egypt. NPR's Soraya Sahardi Nelson was at the large cathedral compound for the emotional funeral.
Soulful chants by the priests of this Orthodox rite blared from speakers outside St. Mark's Cathedral. Black-clad mourners who managed to push their way into the cathedral compound jostled for space in front of large screens broadcasting the funeral. Only senior clerics and dignitaries were allowed inside the cathedral. One was Pope Paulus. He is Shenouda's counterpart in Ethiopia and led a prayer broadcast on state TV.
He has taught us love, friendship, kindness, goodness, cooperation, and purity and sanctity.
Outside the cathedral, that message appeared lost. Frustrated mourners who arrived shortly before the funeral banged on the main cathedral gate and yelled to be let inside for one final glimpse of their beloved patriarch. But the security guards refused them entry. Others, like this woman who did make it inside but tried to leave, screamed at the guards to let them out. Outside, scores of policemen scuffled with the grieving and frustrated crowd. Shenouda was a charismatic leader adored by most of Egypt's roughly 10 million Christians, but he kept a strict line on church doctrine, including the ban on divorce. During the rule of Hosni Mubarak, the patriarch gave strong support to the government. That's been harder for Coptic Christians to do since the revolution, given the growing political clout of Islamist hardliners and interreligious violence.
I think the Coptic community is very anxious.
Khaled Fahmi chairs the history department at the American University in Cairo.
Shenouda was their figurehead, was their symbol, and he used to negotiate on their behalf with the authorities and strike deals with the Mubarak regime. And now that he's gone, everything is up in the air.
Fahmi predicts with Shenouda gone, Christians in Egypt may not want their future pope to play such a strong political role. But some Coptic mourners appear to yearn for continuity. One is 19-year-old Marina Ezat. The college student says she hopes Shenouda's secretary, a bishop who had been with him for 21 years, would succeed him. But who the new pope will be is not yet decided. According to Egyptian news reports, church officials will narrow the field down to three candidates. A young child will then be selected to pick one of those three names out of a hat. Soraya Sarhadi Nelson, NPR News, Cairo.
All Things Considered is a production of NPR News, which is solely responsible for its content. Like a story you heard on this or another NPR program? Share it with a friend at npr.org. While there, you can also hear stories you missed, enjoy expanded content, or connect to your favorite member station. This is NPR.
Tomorrow, tens of thousands of people are expected to arrive on Washington's National Mall to celebrate not believing in God. They call it a Woodstock for atheists. As NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty reports, atheists see this weekend's Reason Rally as a chance to show their power in numbers and also change their image.
To David Silverman, the rally marks a coming of age for non-believers.
We'll look back on the Reason Rally as one of the game-changing events when people started to look at atheism and look at atheists in a different light.
It's a celebration, he says, with famous atheists like Richard Dawkins, funny atheists like Eddie Izzard, and singing atheists like the rock group Bad Religion. But the main point of the rally, says Silverman, who's president of American Atheists, is not to tweak the faithful. It's to encourage closeted atheists to take heart.
The message is that if you can come out, you can come out. And if you can't come out, at least you'll know you're not alone. and maybe sometime soon you'll be able to come out of the closet to your family.
But fellow non-believer Hemant Mehta says it's not easy. Atheism has an image problem.
Every time you hear the word atheist in the media, there's always like an adjective before it. It's always angry atheist, militant atheist, staunch atheist. It's never happy, smiling atheist.
Mehta, who writes a blog called The Friendly Atheist, says that openly dismissing God in the most religious country in the West requires courage. You risk losing friends, family, even jobs because of your non-belief. In poll after poll, he says, people say they don't like atheists. One showed that people think an atheist is more likely to steal than a rapist.
People have this notion that atheists are immoral, not trustworthy, unelectable. How do you change that at such a huge level? It starts by people everywhere just coming out of the closet as atheists.
Mehta helps run an atheist charity. He's been invited to megachurches such as Willow Creek near Chicago to explain why he does not believe in God. He says atheists need to take a page from the gay rights movement. If people know and love an atheist, they'll be less likely to stigmatize them. But not everyone thinks that's the best approach.
First of all, I'm not sure that it is to atheist benefit to always present a kinder, gentler face.
Greta Christina is a prominent atheist blogger and author of a new book called Why Are You Atheists So Angry? Christina says there's a tension in the movement. On one side are what she calls firebrands, like Oxford biologist Richard Dawkins, who's called some believers, quote, staggeringly ignorant and insane. On the other are the diplomats, like Hemant Mehta, who deliver the same message of a godless universe, but politely. She says every modern social movement, civil rights, feminism, gay rights, had the same tension, and you need both.
We certainly want to let people know, again, we're your friends, we're your neighbors, we're good people. But I think it's also to our benefit to let people know that we are to be reckoned with, that we're not going to let ourselves be doormats, and that we're mobilized, that we're organized, and when people get us angry, we're going to take action.
For example, nearly 300 atheists will be meeting with staff and members of the House and Senate today, partly to lobby and partly to show their numbers. Indeed, David Silverman says atheists have time and momentum on their side. He says the fastest growing segment of religion in the U.S. is no religion, people who identify as atheist, agnostic, or secular. Just look at Canada and parts of Europe, he says. Religion there is going extinct.
I believe America is not far behind. I believe in 2 decades, we will be in a position where secularism is the norm.
That would be great, says Greta Christina. But in the meantime, she has a more immediate goal. She wants to go to the Reason Rally and have a good time.
This is going to be the event that you don't want to have missed out on. You don't want 10 years from now to say, I could have gone to the Reason Rally and I didn't because I had to do my laundry.
Just like Woodstock, she says. She only hopes it doesn't rain. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
In Tennessee, administrators at Vanderbilt University have started to enforce a non-discrimination policy for student groups. The policy has created a dilemma for faith-based organizations: either drop requirements that their leaders hold certain beliefs, or forfeit school funding and move off campus. Blake Farmer of member station WPLN reports.
Members of Christian student groups say Vanderbilt's non-discrimination policy has them feeling more like victims of discrimination. They include the biggest man on campus.
I'm Jordan Rogers, quarterback, junior here at...
The little brother of NFL superstar Aaron Rodgers is a member of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. It's one of more than 400 student groups at Vanderbilt being required to comply with an all-comers rule. College Democrats have to accept Republicans, and religious groups have to welcome atheists. They say they're fine with that. But under the policy, all members must also be eligible for leadership positions, which is where many draw the line. The star quarterback joined the chorus of opposition at a town hall meeting on campus.
If someone that doesn't share the faith is teaching, then what's the point of even having these organizations?
A 2010 Supreme Court decision affirmed that institutions can legally refuse to recognize a religious organization unless it allows all students to join. Like other campuses, controversy surfaced at Vanderbilt when several gay students were asked to leave a religious fraternity. That's when the university stepped up enforcement of its non-discrimination policy. Administrators believe they have support from most students, though few speak out at public forums.
My name is Cole Garrett. As you may assume by the giant rainbow flag on my back, I am a gay man, and this is a very sensitive and important issue to me.
Garrett says the all-comers rule has also allowed him to become an officer in the Asian American Student Association, even though he has no Asian ancestry. At a campus volleyball tournament where sorority sisters in matching tank tops are practicing, sophomore Christine Rodriguez says she supports the university position, and she believes faith groups are dancing around the real issue.
Because obviously they can't openly say, oh yeah, the reason we're so angry is because of we don't want gay people in our organization, you know? But you'll hear it from other people like me, I guess.
Rodriguez is a proud member of Alpha Chi Omega, which doesn't exactly practice what she's preaching, but the selective pledging process of secular sororities and fraternities is safe. School officials say the federal statute known as Title IX protects them from the non-discrimination rule.
For them to exempt the Greeks, okay.
Thomas Singleton sees hypocrisy. He's a retired businessman, Vanderbilt alumnus, and donor who attended a recent forum.
If they insist on implementing this policy, I will probably stop all relationships with Vanderbilt.
Why is it that serious to you?
Because I'm a Christian, and I feel like Christians have a right to express their views and to choose their leadership on this campus, and they seem to be the primary group that's singled out in this policy.
Despite alumni threatening to put away their checkbooks, university officials have resolved to stand their ground. Vanderbilt Provost Richard McCarty sees maintaining the all-comers rule as a way to overcome a checkered past with discrimination. The school kicked out a prominent black student during the civil rights era.
And maybe some of us who are old enough to remember those days don't ever want to go back.
Now, though, it may be religious groups asked to leave, but in the name of non-discrimination. For NPR News, I'm Blake Farmer in Nashville.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm David Green. Pope Benedict XVI arrives in Mexico later today. It's the start of his first visit as Pope to Spanish-speaking Latin America. The trip will also take him to Cuba. Mexico's brutal drug war is expected to be the central focus during the Pope's visit to that country. As NPR's Jason Beaubien reports, the drug war is already dominating preparations for the Pope's visit.
The narcos in Mexico know how to get their message out to the masses, whether it's with a series of human heads lined up outside a slaughterhouse or a pile of human corpses dumped at a prosecutor's convention. Mexico's criminal gangs make their feelings known. For the arrival of the Pope, an offshoot of the La Familia cartel this week strung up 11 banners around Guanajuato welcoming Pope Benedict and declaring that they won't attack their rivals during his visit. The local Archbishop, Jose Guadalupe Martín Rábago, at a press conference earlier this week, called on people to not be afraid that narco violence could mar this three-day event. The Archbishop says he's not afraid that anything is going to happen during the papal visit. He says he's aware of the extensive security apparatus that's been put in place to protect both the Pope and the public. Pope Benedict is coming to Mexico in part to shore up the church's support in a strong bastion of Catholicism. In the 2010 census, 83% of Mexicans identify themselves as Catholic. And in terms of sheer numbers of followers, the only country in the world with more Catholics is Brazil, which Benedict visited in 2007. Speaking this Sunday at the main cathedral in Mexico City, Cardinal Norberto Rivera said the Pope is coming to reinforce Mexicans' faith and hope during a very difficult time for the country. In these times, as the country is overshadowed by sin, violence, corruption, and social disintegration, the cardinal said, the Pope will remind Mexicans of God's power to offer guidance and salvation. Rick Jones, with Catholic Relief Services based in El Salvador, says this message will resonate throughout the region.
The drug violence and the drug wars right now are really one of the major topics in Latin America.
Jones says from Colombia through Central America all the way to the U.S. border, drug cartels have been terrorizing communities, especially in parts of Mexico where the gangs have waged a protracted, brutal war against the state. He says it's caused people to lose faith in humanity.
Every time I talk to people in Mexico, they question themselves rhetorically, saying, what's happened to us? Why are we shooting at one another? People are looking for some ethical direction, and I think the church still has a role to play in that.
Jones says the Catholic Church still has a lot of credibility in Latin America, and he expects the Pope, during this visit, to underscore how the church can help confront the terror that's currently being spread by organized crime.
A call for coming together, overcoming fear, mistrust, is an important role I think that the Pope will have in sort of ushering that call, and then that the church will play in terms of actually reaching out to people to try and find the spaces where they can come together and address these issues.
The Pope's itinerary includes a meeting tomorrow with President Felipe Calderon. On Sunday, he'll hold an open-air mass on a hillside under a towering statue of Christ. Jason Beaubien, NPR News, Mexico City.